Welcome to 216, a link to the past Randomizer podcast. I'm your host, Beer Agent. Back again, season number four. Today on the show, we've got Timp from the Go Mode podcast, completing the trifecta of the three hosts. Dante was our first guest on 216 way back when, last year. We had Herfy Durfy on in season two, and now we have Timp completing the trifecta. Really fun conversation with Timp. It should come as no surprise that Timp is excellent behind the microphone. I say this a lot, but we really could have just kept going. And there was so much more to cover and so much more to talk about. I know he's not just the Go Mode podcast, but it's, you know, a big part of our conversation is the history of the Go Mode podcast. And it's really interesting. And I'm excited to get to that interview. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think you're going to enjoy it. So the main tournament qualifiers have just wrapped up as this is being released. Sunday was the last day to get your five races in, either live or through the Asyncs. And then the reveal of all of the scores and who is going to be qualified should be released soonish, I would think. Within the next couple of days, if not sooner, would be my guess. I think they're going to do some restreams of the Asyncs using other people's YouTube videos, which will be pretty neat. And then I think in a week they'll be doing a reveal stream, which will reveal all the groups. This qualifier was so much different than all of the past qualifiers. So not only are they doing the Asyncs this year, but they're doing five modes. As I'm recording this, they just wrapped up the fourth live race. I think they're averaging like 60 to 70 people per race, which is not bad. Now, it might come as a surprise, especially with what I talked about last week and my relationship with Rando, or competition more specifically, that I actually did run the Asyncs. I did run all five of them. I ran all five in a day and a half, like the day after they became available. Not sure what the cutoff's going to be, but it doesn't really matter. I'm not going to be running in the main tournament. I mean, I talked all last week about my relationship with competition, and as I mentioned, it is addicting. There's part of me that kind of wants to play, but I just know that I can't. I know that it's not good for me. I know that it's the wrong thing for me. So I won't be entering. More than anything, I really just wanted to test out how the whole async thing worked. And I shouldn't be surprised, but Synac is freaking amazing. Like the way that it runs, the way that you are able to just click a couple buttons in Discord and it runs as well as it does. And then you upload your videos to YouTube and give them a link. Really impressive. Really impressive. So big kudos to the admins and to Synac and all that were involved in making it work. I think it's a really cool way of running the qualifiers, and I'll be interested to see how it all shakes out. I think I mentioned last week that the one thing I think is missing from the qualifiers is seeing live scoring, seeing where you place, and kind of the stress of do I run another one or do I sit where I'm at, that kind of stuff is gone because we don't know how everyone's scored. With only five live races, you can't really get a good estimate of where you're going to be in the final 128. But I think that's worth losing for how well the system is run. And I think the addition of being able to see your scores is a really cool compromise. If you click the little button, you can actually see your scores in the Discord. So good luck to everyone in the main tournament. I'll be watching for sure. Probably will be doing some commentary here and there. Really interested to see who makes the top 128. Because I'm looking at names from the live qualifiers, and there's lots of names of people I don't recognize or know. That's cool. That means there's new people entering the community. We'll see how everything pans out with these qualifiers. But overall, I'm really impressed. I think they did a really good job. I think this was a good compromise to what has been done in the past. I think running five modes is a good idea. Not crazy about the modes. I feel like things have gotten, this is with the league, this is with like all of the tournaments that run multiple modes. I think there should be more of a return to the basic and let the other tournaments do the weird stuff. Open Hard Plus, obviously, is a good idea. Standard boots seems weird. It feels like just do casual boots. That's what's played. I'd get rid of Invrosia. I think inverted is just not a good mode. To race, I'd put cross keys in there because cross keys is so mainstream now. I'd replace fad keys with just 80 keys. I don't know what I'd replace MC Boss with. Maybe just a regular full itemizer. I don't know if you need the map compass shuffle. That's my least favorite part about playing that mode, is the MC part. Maybe you just do boss itemizer instead. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't shuffle enough. But I think AD keys, cross keys, open hard, Kaz boots, I think those four should be like the staples of the main tournament. Let everyone else do the weird stuff. But I'm not playing, so who cares what I think? What do you think? What modes should the main tournament be running? Are you happy with the modes chosen this year? Are you excited for the main tournament? Are you excited for the Challenge Cup? How was your experience with the Asyncs and the qualifiers? Do you agree with me? Am I nuts? Or did you enjoy doing the Asyncs and uploading them to YouTube? Or did you skip the Asyncs and just run the five live ones? Let me know what you think. All right, on the show today, we've got Timp. Timp's been around for a long time. I didn't even realize how long he had been a part of the community. But the Go Mode podcast has been going for almost 5 years now, so that's pretty impressive. Timp's got a great story, and even though he's got his own podcast, really gets to expand on his story here. So I was really glad that he joined the show, and then we're able to dive into a bit of his backstory, hear about his early days gaming with his family, how he got into music, and where he came up with the idea of doing a podcast for this silly community. So let's get to it. Here's Timp. All right, Timp. So glad you're joining the show. I'm not sure if you're familiar with podcasting at all, but we're going to talk into microphones and then people are going to listen to us. So
like this thing that's in front of me, should I just like talk into this? Or
yeah, you talk into it and then it records your voice and then people listen to it. It's a cool idea. And okay. So we're going to talk a little bit about you, and we're going to talk a little bit about Rando. And you're actually the last of the Go Mode podcast crew to be on the show. So
that's right.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And thank you so much for having me. Super excited to be here. We were on the schedule for before your break, and then you let us know that, you know, you were going to take a little bit of a pause, and we were all, of course, like, that's totally fine. But I have to admit, I was a little sad. I was really looking forward to this. And I was super excited when he reached back out to me and said, let's get it going again. So super happy to be here.
I've been on your show multiple times. I feel like we've had a good rapport. I don't feel like we've ever actually played Rando together or against each other. Mm. But I feel like maybe this is just because you do a podcast. I feel like I know you a lot better than other people because you get to hear from you more often. You know what I mean? And I think that's one of the cool parts about doing a podcast is you actually get to know someone a little bit more and get to know like where they're from or their story or kind of like their take on things. But I feel like there's so much of your story that is still missing. So I feel like, I guess starting at the beginning would be kind of cool. So like video games, right? Were you playing games as a kid? Was gaming an important part of growing up?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So we were a Nintendo family. I remember getting a what we would call at the time regular Nintendo pretty right. early on. Mm-hmm. I was born in late 86. So, you know, the Nintendo had been out and, you know, we got it for Christmas at some point. And yeah, played a ton of Mario, Zelda. You know, I've talked on the podcast before on GMP about, you know, gathering in the living room with my family and getting one of those maps from a video game store that tells you where all of the dungeons and secrets are. And you know, those are some of my fondest memories as a kid are, you know, playing Zelda with the family in the living room. So I feel like that was really informative of the kind of game that I end up really enjoying. And also just like what I enjoy for fun. I love my family. I love, you know, being together with them. And it, I think a lot of it stems from like those kind of moments. So.
Sure. Did so you came out and video games were just there, right? Because the Nintendo comes out in around, I think, 85-ish mm-hmm. in America. Yeah. And so mm-hmm. as far as back as you can remember, the Nintendo was there, like your parents picked up the Nintendo before. Do you have any siblings?
Yeah. So I have two sisters that are both, they're 8 and 10 years older than me. So.
Okay.
Yeah. And my mom actually is one of the best Dr. Mario players I have ever seen with my own eyes. She literally would start on level 20 on high speed and she would not be eliminated until like in the mid 30s of levels. And it just keeps going from 20, you know, it's, I think it's the same distance from level 19 to level 20, just keeps coming at you over and over to see how far you can get. Same thing with Tetris. She's also an incredible Tetris player, but she, you know, loved gaming. Sometimes she would even surprise me with some of the games she wouldn't get into. She really liked Castlevania 3, you know, just kind of randomly. So, yeah, so video games were always around in my house. I remember also as a kid growing up and beating Super Mario RPG Legend of the Seven Stars. And my mom was like calling me to come do a chore or something. And I was like, Mom, I just beat this game. I have to see the end of it. And I still remember to this day, she was like, I'm sorry. I didn't realize. Okay, just come when the game's over. Like, she totally understood. Wow. You know, she's like on that level. Wow. So,
yeah. That's super modern. Like, I feel like that's something I would do, but I grew up gaming, right? And your mom, obviously being older, didn't grow up with the video games. Maybe she had Atari or something beforehand, yeah. But for her to be like into it, that's cool. That's super cool.
Yeah, I really think Nintendo was the beginning of, you know, gaming in my family. I don't think anyone had an Atari or anything like that, but I do know that my mom, you know, just from having talked to her, you know, from before I was born, they really enjoyed like game night with my uncle and his wife, you know? And so I think she's always kind of had this mind for puzzles. She also, even to this day, you know, Sudoku, crosswords, she's constantly got her mind occupied by some kind of puzzle of some sort. So yeah, you know, and I think I inherited a lot of that from her. And yeah, it's always been, you know, just kind of a part of my life growing up as a result.
That's cool. So you said you were a Nintendo family. Did that continue on as the consoles continue to come out? Was it Super Nintendo and 64, GameCube, all that?
It was, yeah. Pretty simply, like right down the middle, I just have to say yes. Eventually, I would branch out to get a PS and a PS2 and, you know, got a 360 in college. So, you know, I started to dabble in other ones as I got older and it became easier to acquire new consoles. But growing up, it was just pretty much whatever the new Nintendo console was, that was what we'd pick up. And then I had friends who had, you know, a Dreamcast or a PS2, you know, and then I would get to experience a lot of the games, you know, by spending the night at their house or doing a console swap. You know, I had a friend that for a month, I gave him my SNES and he gave me his Genesis. And that also is where my first copy of Link to the Past came from, because that was part of the, you know, SNES swap. It was like his uncle, this is getting so random at this point, but his uncle had this copy of Link to the Past and I had played it a little bit growing up and I wanted a copy for myself. So I like traded him for that, but he wanted it back. But then I literally never saw him again. So it became my copy. And that's the copy that I own today. That's like in my mom's basement now. So
that's awesome. So yeah. It's always assumed that Zelda was everyone's favorite because, you know, we spend so much time playing Link to the Past. Was that the case for you? Was Zelda your favorite, or were you more Mario, Donkey Kong? What was your favorite growing up?
Zelda's definitely the lead. I got really into Super Smash Brothers and Melee growing up. Mario Kart was always, I always had like the newest Mario Kart. One area of Nintendo I didn't really get into was the handhelds. So I kind of missed out on the Advance, the DS, the 3DS, all of those. So, you know, I've been enjoying going back through on Switch and like, you know, filling in some of those blanks now. But pretty much every mainline Zelda game that was on a, you know, home console, I would play, you know, the month that it came out and beat all the way through. Trying to think of other games. I mean, it really was like, you know, the mainline Nintendo games, Donkey Kong, all three of the Donkey Kong countries, Donkey Kong 64. I really liked Rare growing up, actually, now that I think about it. Yeah. You know, Banjo-Kazooie, I just like could not get over how incredible that game was when I was a kid. And I actually just recently replayed it a few weekends ago and beat the whole first world. I didn't think I would make it that far. I thought I would just like play it for a second and be like, yeah, it's too old, but it kind of holds up a little bit. So they made a hell of a video game, Rare, back in the day. So I always liked those. And then my sister and I bonded by playing Perfect Dark together.
Right. Oh, I was just about to ask about GoldenEye because, you know, everyone my age, your age, was playing Gold. I mean, I played so many hours with GoldenEye. I never actually got into Perfect Dark, though. I feel like by the time Perfect Dark came out, I was on to other stuff. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like you were still into Perfect Dark.
Well, I guess my friend, my buddy at the time, you know, we were in the same grade growing up. We had very similar gaming interests. I was over at his house all the time and vice versa. So I think he got Perfect Dark and showed it to me. And then I probably sat my sister down, who again is 8 years older than me. And, you know, we did the GoldenEye thing too. We were all about it, you know, even same, you know, kind of thing that you hear, like our mom was sitting down playing. She would never play a first person shooter, but like right. the whole family would get in on it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that is how I ended up being like to her, like, hey, this is like GoldenEye, except like way more weapons and cool game modes and AI and stuff like that. So we got really into Perfect Dark, and I'm kind of just like sitting here waiting for it to be released on the virtual console for Switch, because I actually just moved into a new house and I live literally right around the corner from that same sister. And I just can't wait for that to come back out, because we're gonna have some yeah. more like late weekend nights, you know, playing yeah. Perfect Dark into the wee hours.
I don't know if this is the same for you, but for me, I feel like a lot of these re-releases, it's cool. I'm glad that they're available. And it also kind of taints a bit of my memories of those games. Mm. Like, I loved GoldenEye. I played hours and hours of GoldenEye, just like all kids our age did.
Yeah.
The controls are awful, man. Like, when you play it now, it's just so much different. Like, that 64 controller is just awful. It's just an awful controller.
Yeah.
And so when I go back and try to play, because I got the 64 controller for the Switch to get like that real classic feel.
Oh yeah.
It just sucks, man. It just sucks when you're used to when you're used to modern controls. I've also been doing like a Mario replay, and I love Mario 64. I grew up playing Mario 64, but man, the controls are so rough. It's so hard to control. So it kind of like ruins a little bit for me going back. I don't know if it's the same for you.
No, totally. I absolutely agree. And you know, so I don't have one of those fancy controllers. So I've been going back through some of these like 64 games on Switch and just using the like Joy-Cons or whatever. And I almost feel like it's a little better that way. It, you know, it doesn't recreate the experience of being a kid, which is, I think, kind of one of the reasons I'm even going back and playing some of these games. But it, yeah, like you said, it just hasn't aged that well. So maybe it's for the best that I'm playing on a different controller. It helps. It almost feels like it's like upscaled to today's technology when I do it that way, and makes it a little easier to play. Some of those games, they're too far gone, or we're too far advanced past them to really be able to come back and enjoy.
Yeah. Like the early 3D stuff, like playing like Ocarina of Time, playing Majora's Mask, playing into Mario 64. It's just like, I love those games growing up. But playing them compared to like the controls of Breath of the Wild, which I'm now used to, it's just not the same. And it just like kind of ruins a little bit for me, where I'm like, gosh, those memories of me playing those games are almost better than me revisiting that game.
Yeah. Now. And I remember, I don't know what the first game was specifically, first person shooter wise, that did it, but the dual stick controls, you know, where you're moving both of your, you know, joysticks at the same time to strafe and side, you know, look around and things. I remember at the time, the first one of those games that I played being like, this is impossible. This makes no sense, because I was so used to GoldenEye and Perfect Dark. And I mean, now I couldn't imagine going back the other way. So just you know, strafing. The game, yeah, exactly. Like someone shoots you and you're like, doing a slow turn to go look at them, like forget it, you know?
So, I mean, there is something to the nostalgia of it. And I don't want to take away, because again, those games are classic, and we wouldn't get to where we are now without those like stepping stones. You know, it feels like they were there for us to get to where we are now. But man, you go from like play Mario Odyssey to like to Mario 64, and it's just like, oh my gosh, this is hard.
Forget it.
That's why I'd love to see like a Mario 64 remake, like on the Odyssey engine, like when they did the Mario All-Stars for the Switch that had 64 Sunshine and Galaxy on it.
Yeah.
I was really hoping for something more, like they upscaled the graphics and stuff, but it does control a little bit smoother, but it'd be awesome to play Mario 64, because it has such great level design. It has such a great game. It's just the controls and the camera are just a little ancient, but go off the beaten path, man. I'm sorry.
No, totally fine. I'm having fun.
I can rant about Mario 64 and the 64 days, because I grew up with that stuff. It's so important to me.
Oh, yeah.
So you're playing Nintendo and stuff. As you got older, you got into more consoles. Did your interest change, or did you stay with like console games? Did you get into computer games? Did it expand? Were you playing a lot more stuff? Or did, as you got older and like college age and stuff, did you kind of stop gaming?
Yeah, that second one, actually. So in high school, you know, still playing quite a bit. Later years of high school, I think dropped off a little bit as well. Just, you know, super busy with like marching band and percussion ensemble and these other, you know, things that I was really into when I was younger. And then college came around. I really didn't game very much at all. I did take some time to play Twilight Princess, which came out when I was in college. But other than that, I you know, would just kind of do other things. You know, did a lot more socialization. You know, when you're in college, all your friends live within walking distance. So, you know, anytime I did game, here's an example, I guess, you know, Rock Band and Guitar Hero came out while I was in college. If I did any gaming at all, it was getting way too into those two games.
Preach, man. I had this exact same thing, man. I downloaded so many and paid for so many songs on Rock Band and stuff.
Honestly, I'm still, so now that I've moved into this new house, we have a like a bonus like playroom with the TV in it that's absolutely perfect for setting up, you know, all the old Rock Band equipment. So I've been trying to do some research because my preference is the drums. For anyone who knows, I'm a percussionist, so I love, you know, playing those plastic drums and just beating the shit out of them. You know, they're in like terrible shape at this point. I've replaced probably three or four bass drum pedals because I keep snapping them in half because I bring my entire leg weight down on it, you know?
Yeah, I bought a metal one. I bought like a actual metal bass pedal because the ones that come with it are way too flimsy.
Way too flimsy. They're not ready for all this man meat on my leg, you know? But so I've been looking into trying to, like, I know for a fact there are ways you can like buy like a MIDI drum set, like an actual e-kit, and hook that up to either like, you know, I have Rock Band 3 on the 360. That's where I like paid all my money to buy a bunch of songs and stuff. But I know there's like something called Clone Hero that I'm like vaguely familiar with that's similar to that, where I think you can port a lot of that stuff in. So I haven't quite got around to it yet, but I do plan at some point on figuring all that back out and trying to get more into playing more, you know, drums along with the tracks, because it's just so much fun. I absolutely love it. When you really get cooking and, you know, you're sight reading, you know, you can like play a song you've never played before, and it's like, how am I even playing this? If you put this on in sheet music in front of me, I wouldn't know what to do. But these stupid little bars come at me and I look like freaking Tommy Lee, you know, like it's ridiculous. So I'm so sorry, but I don't know why I just pulled Tommy Lee of all people. Like
Tommy Lee. I mean, no judgment here. I guess that's your preference for drummers, but
it's really not. I don't know where that came from. Yeah. So I do apologize. Hilarious. Phil Collins, you know, like there's so many other drummers. Yeah.
Sure.
Anyway.
Let's talk a little about music, because you mentioned you're a drummer and stuff. Where did the love of music come from? Was it also a family thing? Or is your family full of musicians, or was it just something you found and kind of picked up?
Yeah, also my mom. She's a singer-songwriter. She plays the guitar and grew up, you know, covering songs and, you know, playing in bars, you know, doing covers when she was like in her teens. You know, my grandpa would go with her and sit to make sure nobody would bother her. But, you know, she would book these gigs playing in bars. And eventually she got her own public access TV show called Karen for You. Her name's Karen. She was entertaining the citizens of Pleasantville, Pennsylvania, you know, once a week for 30 minutes, just playing mostly either songs she had written or things that were fair use because the station didn't want to pay rights for her to play, you know, anything else. But yeah, she did that. And then eventually she toured a little bit. She was actually on a campaign trail for, I want to say McGovern had like run for president or something like that. She was part of his campaign trail, and the mamas and the papas were also like traveling with them. Wow. And there's this story, you know, that we've heard, you know, growing up that she's told, not a lot of times, but, you know, occasionally she'll tell us about the time that Mama Cass of the Mamas and the Papas received some sort of death threat. So she refused to get on stage to sing at this campaign event. So my mom filled in for her. So that was like, you know, her like big shot basically was, you know, being able to get on stage and sing for all these people with a famous rock band at the time.
That's cool.
Yeah. And, you know, growing up, we would always, you know, she still continued to play the guitar and sing and write songs and you know, she would sit in the basement, come up with them and then play them for us. And there's a song for me and there's a song for our sisters and, you know, all kinds of songs. She still to this day, you know, writes songs and plays every now and then at, you know, gigs around the city. But yeah, so all my love of music absolutely came from my mom. And you know, when I got to high school, I got into to band. Eventually that led to marching band. You know, it was the cool thing to do at my school. We were really good. You know, when we'd go to competitions, we usually would place pretty high. And it was you know, kind of a militaristic kind of approach to practice is kind of what we had there. And I was considering what I wanted to do with my life. I was looking at, you know, something with math, maybe like try to be an architect. I was really into like blocks as a kid. And I thought maybe there was something to that. And it was my mom that was like, you know, I've seen a lot of promise in you as a musician. And I think you, you know, if you love music, you owe it to yourself to pursue that and study that in college. And that's what I ended up doing.
Wow. And it was, you played drums in the marching band.
In the marching band. And also, I would say around like middle school time, I got my first sequencer called Noteworthy Composer that I downloaded online. And I started taking video game music that I heard and transcribing it, you know, trying to just listen to it and be like, okay, the trumpet does this, the bass does that, the drum set is doing this. And I was mostly doing like Super Nintendo songs. And that works perfectly for transcription because there's only so many tracks that can be playing at any given time. So, you know, it was possible to even, you know, with an emulator, go in and isolate each particular track and hear exactly what the notes were. So I didn't find that trick out until much later. But what I was doing, you know, in retrospect, is I really trained my ear to be able to listen to, you know, melody, counter melody, harmony, all kinds of different rhythms. And then eventually I took that and started composing and writing my own music. And that was also, you know, my mom, after hearing some of the things I'd written, encouraged me to, you know, study music further.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So you're in college, you're playing a rock band, you're studying music. Are you then introduced to Twitch or YouTube or streaming or even speedrunning at this time? Or does that come even later?
I would say the idea of, you know, anything approaching like the rando community, the first kind of exposure for me was probably speedrunning. And not to get too hipster, but I was kind of into GDQ before it was cool. Like some of those really early ones, you know, where it was like in some guy's basement. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the ones that are in Herndon, Virginia, you know, which is a location that now we and for the STL, you know, people are very familiar with. So watching some of those really early runs, you know, made me aware of what speedrunning is and the concept of it. And, you know, it's really such a simple concept. It's easy for anyone to kind of stumble across it, but to see, you know, all of these demonstrations of different games repeatedly, you know, really gets you, for me at least, really got me excited about the idea of speedrunning. And then of that, of course, leads to, at the time, Justin TV, and then to Twitch. And I think I talked about this a million years ago on GMP, but I initially decided I was going to be a Space Station Silicon Valley speedrunner. That was a N64 game that you should just Google. I don't have time to explain it, but it's a super cool game.
Okay.
And then I quickly realized not only did I not really have the equipment to stream, but also that I was pretty bad at the game. Which I hadn't really considered at first, whether I need to be good or not. Yeah, well, yeah, I'm sure it's not that hard, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not really that good at like the 3D, you know, N64 style platforming. But so that was my first like attempt to kind of get into the world of like streaming yourself playing.
So what got you into watching even GDQ? Because I feel like there's got to be a leap into watching that. Like was that on Justin TV originally or Twitch at the time? Or was it? Were you watching YouTube Let's Plays or something? Like, how did you even find GDQ?
I have to assume what happened is I was browsing the Something Awful forums, which is something that I've done since 2001, since I was a freshman in high school. It's a community that I've essentially been a part of. And I probably was on their games forum, just bored at work one day, browsing around and probably saw like the speed running thread. And that's where folks would go in and, you know, whenever there's like a cool video or someone breaks a world record, they might casually post in there and link to it. And I remember seeing a Pokemon Blue speedrun that was like an hour 50, something like that, a speedrunner named Worcester. Australian guy. And I watched that and I was like enthralled through the whole thing. It started so casual because you could tell he had just been like spamming or like just, you know, doing run attempts all day. And then, you know, gets the right RNG and starts to, you know, play this one and gets more and more focused as he's playing. And by the end, he's actually like, you can hear him like breathing hard. He's like freaking out. And, you know, to a lot of people, it would be like, wow, what a loser. This dude's like getting all excited playing Pokemon. But I just absolutely could feel and understand the excitement of like, this is something that no one has ever done as fast as I'm doing it right now. In a way, I'm sort of making history. Maybe it's not the kind of history that, you know, kids are going to learn about in school, but it will persist on the internet and it is going to have to be mentioned whenever people talk about the fastest person to ever play Pokemon. You know, I was one of the people who did it. So just that concept, I think, was really attractive to me. And that doesn't even start to scratch the surface in terms of like, it's just cool to watch somebody play a game fast, you know, which is also a big part of it, you know, the glitches and, you know, the tech. So it really was a love of speed running and kind of just like a general awareness of that, you know, watching some people on Twitch. I got really into Caleb Hart and I would watch him a lot. Probably couldn't, you know, really give him a full endorsement these days. I've heard he's kind of a shithead now. But you know, he was one of the ways I kind of got into watching, you know, speedrun attempts.
And what was he running?
He was doing a lot of Mega Man X. So I got really into that. There's also another guy named Cypher who also is a shithead now, I believe, who was doing Mega Man 2 runs. So I watched a lot of him as well. From there, I think it probably, you know, is where I got into Randomizer.
Sure. So I feel like there's been a common thread through a lot of people that have come on that show of that something awful forum getting them into speedrunning or rando one way or another. Did you continue hanging out on something awful?
I still do to this day. Yeah. So the way it works is you pay $10 to be a member and then you're able to post on any of the forums. And I think even without paying, you can still occasionally read them. Sometimes they're behind paywall, sometimes they're not. But it's just when I first discovered it in like 2001 or whatever, it was mostly just a comedy website. And I thought it was funny, irreverent at times, you know, maybe a little bit blue. But generally, you know, I got the sense that the people who were writing there and hanging out there were really intelligent. In fact, back then there was like this rule that you had to speak in complete sentences. And if you used like you instead of YOU, you could get probated for 6 hours and not allowed to post. Like they were really strict about it. Now I would absolutely hate it if it was like that today, but I think growing it that way or like setting that precedent early. And now a lot of us are still around, you know, we all kind of have an understanding that it's hard to say this without sounding like a total douchebag, honestly, but I can kind of assume that everyone posting there has at least a certain level of awareness of the world around them, intelligence, that just, you know, I tend to trust recommendations from them a little bit more, you know, for things like hobbies and speedrunning and politics and, you know, all kinds of things. So it's a kind of weird little pocket of the internet. It doesn't have the best history. You know, you could definitely Google it and find like terrible posts from people, you know, over the last 20 years or whatever. But overall, ultimately, it's a very open and accepting place now. And I do think that, you know, I spend a lot of time there because I enjoy, you know, being a part of that community. And there's a contingent of us in the rando community as well.
For sure. So jumping forward then, because those early GDQ days in the stuff that you're talking about with speedrunning, or predate rando by quite a bit. What was your rando discovery then?
I believe it was in the speedrunning thread on Something Awful. Somebody was like, hey, this isn't really a speedrun, but it's speedrun adjacent. There's this new thing called Link to the Past Randomizer. That might have actually been Nep, who was the person that did that in retrospect. But then she eventually created a new thread for Randomizer, and you know, a lot of us were posting in there. And this was like early 2018, maybe even a little bit, you know, like late 2017. So that's where I first got into it. And then I was, I had my own company at the time and I would work from home. I guess just to kind of explain, I was absolutely terrible as a business owner. I, as my own boss, I'm very bad. I run a real loose ship, you know?
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time not, you know, trying to go out and get clients and do work for them, but instead just kind of sitting around and watching YouTube. So was sort of at that point in my life and watching a lot of rando on YouTube, you know, as races were uploaded, I would watch them, you know, usually like that same day. So that was really how I got really into it. And the first time I really like made a sort of move to be a part of the community was late 2017, like literally the last week of 2017. I decided that when I was watching these races, there were a lot of terms that got thrown around that were probably confusing for new folks. And I wanted to make a kind of like compendium of all of these slang terms and put them out on the web where they'd be easily Googleable instead of having to go through a Discord server or a Word document or, you know, a Google Drive sheet or something. So I registered the domain randoguide.com and just started to create page after page of these different terms. I would define them. I had a form where people could submit suggestions for their own pages to create. And I, over the course of a few months, created, you know, I think like 80 to 100 pages of just various, you know, terms that people would use describing, you know, like graveyard ledge. Like, what does graveyard ledge mean? Oh, it's this check right here. And I'd have a little picture that shows it, you know, shows you where it is. So that creating that, you know, it was a huge diversion, an excuse to not work, but also kind of an excuse to use my work skills, which at the time was like, you know, creating websites and doing SEO for people. So I was kind of honing that as well, but also just, you know, it was a fun hobby and it was fun to see how the traffic on that website could grow and, you know, trying to improve the website. And then eventually when I did end up starting Go Mode Podcast, I put a link to the Go Mode Podcast on every page of that website to kind of drive traffic then to the podcast. And Rando Guide is still up there. I haven't updated it in probably 2 years. and there are some terms that are just so stupid on there. Like, one commentator used it one time and I just thought it was funny, so I would add it to the list. And now, since it's on the website, it kind of legitimized that term, so people think it's a real term when it's not. So it's kind of a mess. I probably should take it down at this point, but it it did help me to get where I am. So it's, it is what it is, whatever.
Double-chested fairy. What is double-chested fairy?
I think it's pyramid fairy, right? Because there's two chests in there. But yeah, I don't like one person probably used that term one time. And I was like, that deserves to be added to my website, you know, like kind of irresponsible, honestly.
So at this time, were you just watching Rando or were you playing as well?
I really was just watching. And the first time that I played was for a tournament put on in the Something Awful community. I think NEP organized that as well. And that was also kind of what I got Discord for. And, you know, sort of off to the races once I was into Discord. But yeah, this tournament was the first time that I really actually, you know, I think I downloaded one or two seeds to play kind of casually. But in terms of trying to go fast and race, that was the first time that I actually made that attempt was in this tournament.
Were those like async races or were you having to race on SRL and stuff?
Those were live, actually. Yeah, I don't know if we were on SRL. I think we were just doing countdowns through Discord, like super low tech. There was commentary. I remember that because Axial commentated on one of the first races that I did. And that was where I was like, wow, this man has a smooth, silky voice. I should ask if he wants to do a podcast with me. So yeah. So there was some sort of restream, but it was, yeah, super low tech. I think I might have screen recorded one of them. I feel like I uploaded that to YouTube at some point very early. But yeah, it was like summer of 2018 when I first started to actually play and try to go fast.
Okay. So were these just Discord races then, or when did you start stepping into like live SRL races?
Yeah, I probably would have been whatever the next main tournament was after that, because at that point, I think we had started the podcast. If anything, I felt sort of an obligation to, you know, participate in whatever the community event at the time was. So that probably would have been whatever tournament was after summer of 2018.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're, this is interesting because I feel like your perspective is so much different than everyone else's, where it's like, a lot of people see the game and then say, hey, I want to play that. And you, it feels like you like playing the game, but are more interested in some of the other aspects, like starting a podcast. How does that even How do you even start to do that?
What I really liked about the game more than anything is the puzzle that the game presents and the challenge mm-hmm. of trying to unravel that puzzle before your opponent can. Mm-hmm. So the thing that has always really attracted me to the game is the statistics and gambling kind of aspect to it of, do I go and check this chest that's really far out of the way, or do I go to these three chests that are a little bit closer? But here's the catch. There could be something really valuable in that chest that's over there. It's just so much fun to pause it on situations like that. And then to watch when someone does take that gamble and they go get that chest, it's just so exciting to watch. And yeah, I think that is really what got me into it. And playing it really only came secondary, like you said, as a way to try to further understand it. And like I said before, as sort of an obligation, you know, I felt like in order to effectively talk about all of the different situations that the game could bring up that I was so fascinated by and to really unpack them, I owed it to myself and to anyone listening to me talk to play the game to a certain extent so that I knew what the hell I was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. So who was the podcast your idea? Was it a combination? Like, how did that start? How did the group, because it was you, Axial, as you mentioned, and Herf that yeah. started the podcast. Had you done podcasting in the past, and why Rando?
Yeah. So I was sitting at work one day. So, you know, I'd started randoguide.com beginning of 2018, end of 2017, somewhere in there. Sometime between there and the summer of 2018, I went out and got a job. But I got a job at a marketing agency where it was like, as long as you get all of your hours done for all the clients and you have time left over, then like, it is what it is. So mm-hmm. I had a little bit of that extra time one day and I was looking for a podcast to listen to. And I was like, it'd be really cool if there was a podcast about Rando, and there wasn't one. And I just like got struck by lightning where I was just like, it's me. I'm the one that's going to make the podcast about Rando. And I don't know where that came from, because to answer your question, no, I don't have any experience making podcasts, just a ton listening to them. But I just knew so clearly. I was like, there's no reason I can't do this, and it needs to happen soon. And that was when, you know, I reached out to Axial. I had had a couple DMs with Herf before on Something Awful Forums, by the way. He's from there as well. Okay. And so, you know, got that connection with him and kind of only later realized how fortuitous it was that I had reached out to him because of all the connections that he has with, you know, various admin groups. And, you know, he's in the highest levels of Discord servers that, you know, people kind of forgot he was there, and he just gets all of the scoops on all the news, you know.
Right.
And also, I mean, not to mention, he's an incredible guy. He's extremely funny. He's super reliable. Mm-hmm. You know, all the other things I love about Herf. But yeah, so I decided, like, I just felt like it was my destiny to make this podcast and to do it before anyone else had a chance to, and got it out there. And I mean, you know how it is. You have no idea what people are going to think, and then you get a little bit of positive feedback, and it's like, all right, okay, let's keep going. And then we just kept going and going and going.
So when did the podcast first launch?
Yeah, it was August 2018.
Okay. So we're coming up on 5 years now?
Yeah.
Go Mode has evolved and it's changed over those 5 years. Initially, when you set out to do Go Mode, what was the goal? And let me ask you this, why three people?
Yeah, I think three people, because a lot of the podcasts I had listened to and enjoyed up to that point were hosted by three people. Mm. I think it's just a good number for, you know, a casual conversation. I think you can do it with four or five, but it's better if you probably know each other already and kind of know the rules of like who's going to speak when. With two mm-hmm. people, it kind of puts a lot of responsibility on both people. Like everyone's got to be talking at once. Three just felt like, you know, two people can kind of engage and talk about something, and a third person can just listen for whatever is interesting and kind of chime in when they can. Or, you know, three people can kind of go round robin and share their thoughts, and it feels kind of fresh, and it's not just like, you know, the tennis match of two people kind of back and forth. So I knew I wanted three people, and then I just had to kind of figure out who to reach out to, and you know, was able to find two really great guys in Herf and Axial. And then, of course, later on with Tanti.
Was there ever thought of just doing the temp show?
No, because I knew that, you know, what I enjoy listening to is casual conversation, usually with people who are, you know, smart or funny or some combination, or have something mm-hmm. interesting about them, or have an interesting topic they're discussing, preferably both. right. And I just, you know, I also kind of knew, being newer, that I needed someone who had more, or maybe preferably two more people that had more experience with Rando than I did, to immediately speak intelligently about it. I knew I would get mm-hmm. there at some point, but I was definitely nervous coming in that I would not know what I was talking about. So I did want to find some people with some experience.
Mm-hmm. So how did you choose the two that you chose?
Yeah. So like I said, Axial, I heard his voice and recognized that it was just like a perfect voice for radio. But then beyond that, of course, you know, the kind of things he was saying just felt really authentic and genuine. And I felt like I was kind of hanging on to his every word. So mm-hmm. I decided to take a shot with, you know, sending him an invitation. And then with Herf, I think it was, what I had done was, the first person I had reached out to record was Nep. And mm-hmm. Nep did decline, I think because she just had kind of a busy schedule. You know, was, I think, had said something along the lines of, you know, honored for you to reach out to me, but I have to politely decline. And, you know, we ended up being able to have her on later on. And, you know, she's always kind of been there in the background in our community. But after she had said no, I think, what was it really that brought me to her? If I think, like I said, we had DM'd a few times back and forth. I think when I started Rando Guide, he had sent me a DM to like make a correction, do it or something like that. And he had also been the one to reach out to me when I failed my first commentator quiz. So I guess I guess because I had talked to him a couple of times and I knew he was a goon, so he was from the Something Awful community, that there was a pretty good chance that we could, you know, we could speak on a certain level. It's not, you know, even though I didn't really know this guy, like I had said before, because I knew we were both from this, you know, Something Awful forums community, I could sort of, I knew that he had at least something going for him, I guess, for sure. Summarize it, you know?
Sure. And so when Go Mode first starts, it felt like it was more for newer runners. Was that safe to say? Was that the goal of Go Mode early on, was like to help introduce people to Rando, especially with like the website that you built?
Yes, I think it's definitely safe to say that, fair to say that. Part of it was like, I knew, like, one of the things Herf would say was like, I don't know how we're going to come up with episodes for this. It's going to be really hard to come up with topics. And I was like, oh, don't you worry about that. I have a million things I want to talk about. And it started with just like, okay, so how do we tackle this? You know, I think there are dozens and dozens of topics to have an hour and a half long conversation about, but where do we start? And it just felt very logical to me to start with each of the dungeons. So each of the first like 19 or so episodes, with a few breaks in there, were just walkthroughs. You know, we pick one dungeon and just go through it from beginning to end, talk about the Go Mode route, you know, the boss at the end, all kinds of different stuff. Just, but like mm-hmm. we restricted ourselves to that dungeon. And I would also agree that, you know, I don't know if there was necessarily an aim, like an agenda with the podcast. I just felt that there was a vacuum where a podcast could exist. I guess I was kind of wanting to get everyone, which is why I wanted people who were experienced as well. So I wanted the people who have been in the community for a long time to hear it. And, you know, even if they don't think it's for them, at the very least respect its presence and not feel like it's doing, you know, a disservice to the community. But, the other thing was like kind of the same thing with Rando Guide, right? Like there's all these terms that get thrown around that are assumed that you know what they are so often. I kind of wanted to set a baseline of like, we're going to unpack everything. We're not going to assume that you know anything, because there are so many things that are missable in this community. You could be one of the best players playing right now and still miss some little detail about this game. And maybe you can pick it up from listening to us. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess to bring it back around, we weren't necessarily trying to have newer listeners be our audience, but it is kind of how it came off and sort of what ended up happening. Because I think you had left a review kind of early on saying like, initially I didn't listen to this podcast because I thought it was for new people. And I was like, damn, yeah. Like we missed the mark a little bit, because my intention was for it to be about literally anyone who has an interest in the game.
Yeah, I think my initial hang up was I already knew a lot of the sure. stuff that you guys were talking about.
Sure.
And so I was like, do I need to spend an hour and a half listening to guys tell me that stuff that I already knew? I think as you guys evolved and kind of figured out the show, because that's what happens, right? Like whenever you create something, there's a lot of times you'll have an intention on what it is, and then it'll be what it actually is. And then it will grow from that, and it will evolve. Hopefully it will evolve into what
can it needs be to good. Be, what it should be.
Yeah. Right, right. Exactly. And I think, with anything, especially when you start something new, like a podcast about Rando, the first one, right? Like, got to figure out what it is. Like, what is our role? Even if you don't know that, you got to figure that out, right? Like,
yeah,
it's got to happen. It's going to happen naturally. And so I feel like you guys set yourself up by doing the let's walk through the dungeons as a way for beginners, right?
Yeah.
And then that kind of like helped you build what your community was, because then you start like the mentor tournament, which again is for newer runners, right? Like it kind of became what the Go Mode podcast was about, even if it's not exactly what it's about. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it might not come as any surprise to learn that the mentor tournament also was not actually created as a way to, you know, help new runners. Initially, the thought of doing that was, here's a great way to engage new people and vets, people who have been in the community. I was trying to find a way to include both of them when that suggestion came up from a listener in our podcast Discord. I was like, yes, that's it. That is the way to get, you know, the people who show up to all of the tournaments every time that are really good to also be able to participate with new people. And of course, now I'm super proud of the fact that it does help get new people into the community. And I love that exists, you know, and I'm happy to have brought it into existence, but it wasn't the true purpose, you know? So I guess I feel a little bit guilty about that, but, you know, all's well that ends well. Though,
but why? Because it becomes what it's supposed to become, right?
Like, yeah.
I don't think there's any reason to feel guilty about that. I feel like when you create something, look, I created the league, right? Like it's become what it's become. That was never my intention for what the league is. It was a way to play co-op with my friends. It was originally like the intent of the creation of the league. It's way more than that. It's way bigger than I ever thought it would be. And so, you know, a lot of times you'll create something or you'll make something and it just becomes what it becomes.
Yeah.
And I think that's a natural evolution is actually part of what makes it good. Like if it's not, it just dies, right? If it doesn't evolve, it ends up dying. And Go Mode's been going on for 5 years now. So
yeah. No, I guess you're right. It's not necessarily a guilt, but it's like, you know, I was at STL this last year and one of the participants came up and, you know, looked me in the eyes, was like, I just want to thank you for starting the mentor tournament and for hosting that and getting new folks like me into this community. It really means a lot to me. And I'm just kind of like, you know, like, I think that's where like the guilt comes from, is like, I wish I could stand here and say, yes, I am the guy who started this and I did it for all the little people to help you get in. But like, that's not why, you know? So it's
no, because like then I you said, come off as a dick, right?
Right. Like, exactly. That's
what you don't want to. There's, you gotta take pride in the fact that like, I had this idea for a podcast and it's become what it's become. And because of Go Mode, there's now X number of people that have played the game and it's affected their lives. Mm-hmm. I think that's the way to look at it and be as a positive, even if it isn't you specifically that created the mentor podcast or the mentor tournament. It happened because there was room in the Go Mode pod. You know what I mean? Like it's steps.
Yeah.
And I love looking at that kind of stuff because I like to think, again, not to make it all about me, but that's kind of what I do in this podcast with the league, right? There's so many people playing in the league. I have no idea who a lot of them are.
Yeah.
Right. And I see a lot of them talk about how much fun they have in the league, and it's like, oh, that's super cool. They have no idea who I am. They have no idea my involvement of it. That doesn't really matter. Just the fact is, you get to see people enjoying something that you had some part in creating. I think is yep. is kind of why we create stuff, right? Like you create things to put it. You don't make the Go Mode podcast just for you and your co-host. You make it to affect people hopefully, too. Right? Like yeah, that's kind
absolutely.
Of
absolutely definitely.
So Axel ends up leaving the show for personal reasons. I remember listening when he was on, and then when he left, was there a thought of not replacing him? And how did Dante come about joining the show?
Yeah. So kind of going back to like when we started it, you had asked why three people. We talked a lot about that. I knew, I knew I was going to miss Axel. I was sad to see him go, but I knew that I wanted to keep going with it. And I knew that there needed to be three people. So there never really was a thought of, let's just go home. Let's go forward with two or shut it down or anything. It was like, we need to replace Axial. What are we going to do here? And I immediately thought of Dante. I met him at STL 2019. He had DM'd me to say that, he enjoyed the show. He really early on, I want to say like episode 7 or 8, we became aware of him playing a rando seed with his DDR pads at the time. And so I thought that was super cool, and found out he lived really close to me, which doesn't matter at all. But I also was just another thing that was like, feels like everything's kind of lining up. So I just sort of took a shot in the dark and I just DM'd him. I talked to Herf, and then I DM'd him and was like, look, I'm just going to cut right to the chase. Axial is out. Do you want in? Basically, mm-hmm. I said more or less. And he was like, he took maybe a minute to think about it. And he was like, all right, I'm in. And he's never looked back since. So I feel like a genius, zeroing in on Dante and bringing him in for him to then go on and win the main tournament and be a member of the team that wins league. Like, what else could you ask for? I said I wanted someone experienced to speak on the podcast, and we have debatably the best rando player in the game right now coming to you every 2 weeks. Like, I feel like I'm like, I should be like a talent agent or something like that. I don't know. sure. But no, so that having him around has been great for that aspect. But then, like I said about Herf, he's also, hilarious and brings fresh perspectives. And, we disagree with things on things sometimes, which I love. It makes for a great podcast, so it's been really, really awesome having him along for the ride as well.
I think the Go Mode podcast is a good mix of hosts that all have a different perspective, right? Like, you've got the tournament guy with Dante, you've got the old curmudgeon who's been around forever with Herf, and you have you who has like this almost like
filthy casual.
No, like this childlike wonder to it all. I feel like I feel like there's a good mix of it all. I really enjoy that.
Well, thank you.
So the show kind of evolved into what it is now, which I think might be its final form, I guess. Which happened around the time 216 launched last year. Can you talk a little bit about that? And then when you saw 216 pop up, were you like, damn that guy?
Well, I'll get to that. But first, the first part of the question. So where we're at right now, the main thing that we did, the biggest change in my mind, is we cut the runtime of the show. And even just starting there has been a huge improvement in terms of the way that I approach making the podcast, because we were starting to get into, most episodes were around 2 hours, sometimes even more, because we would just talk and talk and talk. And I didn't feel right editing the conversation down. When you only come out every 2 weeks, it's like, well, I'd rather give people more than they want than less. But then that doesn't take into account how long it then takes me to edit, because I'm a pretty meticulous editor. I listen through the entire thing. And, cut out little noises that I hear. I create time codes so people can jump to the part of the episode that interests them. And I can't really do that unless I listen to the whole thing or like take really, accurate, really detailed notes while I'm recording, which I feel like would be distracting. So it takes a decent amount of work to make these. And so cutting down the overall runtime of each episode makes it so much easier for me to edit each one and reduces the overall burnout, I think, because I was maybe starting to approach that around, episode 98, 99, when we finally did make that switch. And then we also, we are still covering news, but we're covering a little bit less. Whereas we used to, you know, like every 2 weeks, we would give you an update on this tournament and how they're doing and what stage they're at now. Now we kind of have a policy of we tell you about it when we first hear about it, and then we'll come back and tell you who won. But we're not going to cover it every single time because it just got to be so like boring, honestly. Just like it's just not that interesting to listen to. It's not that fun to talk about. So we cut out a lot of that, which I think has helped a lot. And we kind of got away from having features, and we're kind of weirdly getting back into that because I think it feels comfortable to have a little bit of a guide of like, this is generally what we're going to talk about this time. So we have kind of come back into like bigger, you know, more theoretical questions and conversations that are meant to provoke, you know, thoughts in the people listening. And we invite them to come into our Discord and discuss. And that's one of my favorite things about the show is, you know, on a Wednesday morning or Thursday, reading everyone's reactions and discussion back and forth and bringing up points that we didn't even think of. And so that's, we're trying to get more of that happening. And I think the changes we have made have been sort of in service of that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I remember messaging you when this show was about to come out. Because I know this is so silly, and we, and the conversation that we had about it is the looking back is kind of silly, but I didn't never wanted to make you think that I was trying to rival Go Mode podcast when I launched 216. Did you feel that way at all? Did you feel like, I mean, you put it into perspective for me in a way that, that really helped me, but I did feel a little nervous not trying to want to feel like I was stepping on your toes.
Yeah, no, I think that's natural. And I appreciated, you know, that I think you had said something to Dante because he was your first guest. And then, you know, he told me. So it's not like I was blindsided when, you know, the announcement came out. But, you know, you also, like you said, DM me. And what I said to you is what I'll say now, which is that anyone who listens to podcasts knows that it doesn't just be, you don't just stop listening to a podcast because another podcast about that thing came out. People who listen to podcasts listen to too many podcasts. And if there's something that you're interested in, you'll listen to both podcasts about that thing, or you'll, you know, pick the one that you like, and that's fine. I don't think anyone, it doesn't seem likely that anyone would stop listening to GMP in order to start listening to 216. I think they either listen to both or they listen to one of them. And it's because they like that one more than the other, not because they're going to pick one and it's going to be the better one, whatever that, you know, air quotes, whatever that means.
Right.
So
I was also pretty comfortable with the fact that it was, our shows are pretty different, right? Like 216 and Go Mode are way different shows.
Exactly. Yeah. Very different. And I've really enjoyed, you know, listening to 216 and getting perspectives into people in the community. You know, it's like, no one has had an origin story that's like celebrity status or anything. A lot of them have been, you know, pretty relatable, pretty normal, for lack of a better word. But even that, it's like fascinating to hear because I do kind of know these people, you know, and in so far as I race with them, you know, see their messages in Discord and things like that. So even just hearing kind of the mundane details of, you know, growing up and the first time they played Link to the Past as a kid, like it's still interesting, even though it's just kind of a, you know, very normal sort of story. So I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, oh gosh, we're running out of time, but there's still so much to cover, Tim, because we've talked so much about Go Mode, which is a big portion of what you do in the community. But
oh yeah,
you do race, right? Like you still are racing a bit. It feels like nowadays you're doing more of like you did the league. And I don't know if you're going to be doing the new main tournament or not, but it doesn't feel like you're doing a lot of like casual racing. What's kind of been your role overall the last few years, I guess 5 years now, with racing? How do you feel like where do you fit your enjoyment of it? Do you consider yourself a casual or do you try to be more competitive? I don't know. It's kind of a broad question, but kind of like where do you feel you fit in within racing?
Well, I think, you know, you are correct in that the podcast, I think, has been my biggest contribution to the community. And I think it would also kind of be my answer, you know, to your question in that I kind of approach the playing in like how it affects the podcast. We had, you know, Axial at the time who was playing a lot when we started. Now Dante, who of course plays a ton. at a really high level. Then you have Herf, who almost never plays to the point where it's like an in-joke on the podcast. I've always felt like I need to kind of be able to speak to that middle space of people who are pretty damn good, but not great. So like when we would do BWSs for a long time, I would really pride myself actually. It's maybe a little bit of a defense mechanism if I'm being honest, but like being right in the middle of the leaderboard, I would be like, yes, that's where I want to be. I'm not great, but I'm not terrible. I am the everyman. I'm right there in the middle. I can relate to them all, you know? So that was like what I would kind of go for is having that, you know, I know enough to be dangerous, but I'm not practicing. I'm not sitting down and like grinding, you know, tech or anything like that. But
are you okay with that? Are you okay being in the middle?
So it's getting a little tougher. I would not say that I'm in the middle anymore. I would say I'm definitely getting surpassed by newer folks that are coming in who are playing more. You know, they're grinding. They're also watching more now, which I don't watch as much as I used to. So they're immediately learning the fastest techniques to get through each room. I still have all the muscle memory of like 3 or 4 years ago tech, you know, like that's what my hands snap to when I go through certain rooms and dungeons. So I'm getting surpassed by that class. And then the people, of course, who have been around longer than me that are still in the community, they, I feel like they'll always still kind of have that edge unless I start to, you know, practice. So I don't feel like I'm necessarily in the middle anymore. And I would say that maybe one of the reasons I don't play as often anymore is because it is frustrating to feel like I'm not as good as I used to be, not in the middle kind of the pack anymore. And I feel like if I want to really enjoy racing again, it's going to involve me specifically making time to get better at this game. And that's kind of the crossroads I'm at right now. I'm not really sure what to do with that. I don't have the motivation to practice as of right now, but I also don't want to give up this game and step away from this community. I'm still having too much fun with it. So that's kind of where I'm at. I don't know. I'm at a weird place, I guess, right now with Rando.
Yeah. Did you participate in a lot more tournaments as you were starting? Do you feel like you were doing like the main tournament and cross keys or anything? Or have you mostly stuck to the league? Because you've been in the league since season two, right?
Season two, three, maybe.
Season three.
Yeah, it might have been season three, but early enough. I was doing more tournaments. I was jumping into the ladder more. I was, just like streaming myself doing like the biweekly seed or like other asyncs occasionally wherever they would pop up. I was streaming myself playing at least once a week. That was kind of my standard for a really long time. And I mean, you know, as basic of an answer as it is, I just have become too busy for that to be realistic now. I have a 2-year-old daughter. And, you know, I talked about having a job before where I was my own boss, where I barely got anything done. I worked at an agency where I could get away with dicking around at work for, you know, a good quarter of the time. Now I don't have one of those jobs. I'm a marketing manager. I run the department. There's a lot less, you know, time I can steal from my company than I used to focus on Rando and playing, you know, like I would work from home on Wednesdays and just play, you know, a seed. Then I can't do that kind of thing anymore. There's no way I could get away with it. So it's just the place I'm at in my life now makes it harder for me to make time to sit down and play for 2 hours uninterrupted for racing. And that's why I've noticed there's a lot more asyncs that are, you know, tournaments are allowing, kind of standardizing. And I'm interested in learning kind of more about that and kind of digging into that. That might be our next Go Mode episode, I think. I'm not sure.
Well, so, I mean, the main tournament just announced that they're doing async qualifiers. So you're going to be asyncing it up for that?
So. Yeah, so I will definitely be participating in the main tournament. I'll be back for League. I think, you know, having those kind of standards that sort of like appointment playing, you know, I've talked about before on GMP, I think is important. And I'm definitely going to be there for those. But also, you know, I think I could do more to get a little bit more involved. And I think I would be happier overall as a result. So I want to, you know, look and focus on those things a little bit, I think.
Sure. I'm going to steal a question that I think might come up on your show is, you've talked a lot about, the fact that you really enjoy the big races that the qualifiers brought with the main tournament.
Yeah.
Are you sad to see those now go away? Because there's, I think, only going to be five for the main tournament.
Yeah, I guess so. I hadn't thought about the fact that those are going away really until you had just said that. So you just made me sad. No, I'm just kidding. that's a bummer. I feel like that's a loss for the community. That was a really unique way to engage with this game and with the other members of the community. And hopefully something else can kind of come back into its place to be like, you know, I know we used to have dailies or maybe we even still do. I'm sorry if we do. And I just said that, but it's just that I think it would be a miss for the community if we didn't have those opportunities anymore. So hopefully somebody can step up and put something together. I don't know.
Sure.
But usually
I feel like, I feel like the community's evolved. Like, I feel like we're in a new era with, I don't know if you see this as much because you're not racing or watching as much, but it really feels like that door branch rando is really starting to creep in and become sort of like the main way people play a lot of these things, with the fact that they can change and do so many weird things within that branch. It just feels like, I don't know what the evolution of rando is going to be in the next few years, but it just definitely feels different. And you talked about, you know, the advent of asyncs kind of creeping up in tournaments as well. So,
I never want to be the guy that's like, things were better the way they were. You know, I try to be as forward thinking as possible and receptive to change and evolution, especially when it's for the greater good, when most people recognize it's a better thing. So, you know, no matter which way we go with it, I'll still be here, you know, and I'll try to do my best to continue to be involved in it and maintain all of the, you know, relationships with all the people in this community that I've built.
So no retirement coming soon from Temp.
No retirement just yet. I know it seems the way I've been talking lately, probably people think that, but no, I'm still very much into this game. Yeah. I love it. I love what it has to offer. You know, when I talk to strangers about it, my eyes light up, and I think that that's enough proof for me that I'm not done with this game yet.
Sure. And if you've listened to your show, we know what you think about people that retire.
I don't respect them. No, I respect the hell out of it. And that's kind of the conclusion I came to on that episode was like, I think it's really healthy to, you know, announce that to your friends, to let them know, give them that heads up. And you know, whatever you end up doing after that, it's fine. If you do actually retire and never play again, hey, you did exactly what you said you were going to do. If you come back, awesome. We love having you back, you know? So I think it's a great thing to do.
Sure. I did appreciate that you reached out to me after that episode, because it felt, but not going to lie, if I had listened to it without you reaching out to me, it would have felt like shots fired against the old guy here. But
that's another thing that's been tough about the podcast is like, we're talking about the community, which is people. So we're always talking about people, and it's like, we're up on this soapbox talking into this microphone, and those people don't have that same opportunity to broadcast their thoughts. That's why we're always asking people to contribute, you know, on our Discord, sure. Like, let us know what you think. Cause like, it really does feel like we're putting words in people's mouths or talking to, you know, to them without giving them a chance to respond so often. Sure. So yeah, whenever I can try to like, hey, just want to let you know, like, we're talking about this. We said this. And yeah, I felt like I needed to reach out. So.
Sure. I should probably clarify what, so it's not being super vague. I retired from racing, and I did like a retirement, just a random pickup stream where I said, this is my last stream. I'm going to not race anymore. And then like the next Go Mode podcast was about people retiring.
The concept so of retiring like, and what, yeah.
So it felt a little close to home, especially when I was like, you mentioned, you messaged me beforehand before it came out that, it's not about you. And, I said, that's no problem. My ego's not that big. Then I listened to it. I'm like, maybe this is about me, even though he told me.
It kind of was about you a little bit because it was, you had announced that. And then in the host channel, we got to talking about the concept of retirement. And I was like, I think there's something here. Like, this is kind of an interesting concept to discuss, and I'd love to get other people's thoughts on it. So like, you inspired the conversation, but I certainly, as I was saying, it didn't feel like I was imagining you standing in front of me and like saying those things. Sure. You just happened to have been the last person who kind of very publicly retired. So
sure, yeah. But you did say like, why would you ever do something like that? Right. Like, why would you announce it? And that felt like, oh, Tim.
Yeah.
I think Herf did a good job of explaining.
Yeah.
Explaining.
And I got educated, honestly.
Yeah. Like maybe a lot of people just leave and you never see them again or hear from them again. It's like, I wonder what ever happened to that person. And yeah, it kind of stinks.
And, yeah. No. It sucks. So, yeah.
All right. I've taken so much of your time. We still have got one last question too. Sorry for going so long, Tim. I feel like you and I could just go forever, honestly.
Absolutely. Not a problem at all.
But you know, we end the show with tilt. The big tilt question. How do you handle tilt? Do you get tilted? I feel like, again, this is maybe a little bit different because of how, your perspective on racing a little bit more. But when you're playing a seed, either during the seed when you make a wrong decision or you get to the end and you feel like you should have won and you don't, do you get tilted? And how do you handle that tilt?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely get tilted. I'm positive there are, if you cared to, you could go back through my Twitch history and find evidence of me getting tilted. And it's going to read as me mostly being very quiet and probably like insulting myself a lot. Being like, oh my God, mm-hmm. what an idiot. Oh, you're so stupid. Yeah. That's usually how it manifests. How I deal with it is just by having a really beautiful life. So, you turn the game off and, you know, I've got my beautiful family. I've got the, you know, not just the family here in my house, but my sisters live nearby and my mom and my wife's parents, you know. So you just got to disconnect. It is tough for me though, I've always felt a lot of pressure having started the podcast and taking such an like educational stance at the beginning. I never wanted it to seem like I am good at this game, so I'm going to teach you. It was always meant to be like, I'm kind of learning with you. But nevertheless, you know, when I would make a stupid mistake that I absolutely should have known better about on stream, it's like a humiliating experience of like, I'm a fraud. People are going to know now that I have no business getting on this microphone and talking about this game. I'm like a baby at this game. I don't know what I'm doing. So it's been tough, you know, to deal with and to try to get past those feelings. But yeah, I feel like the way that I deal with it is I feel like there's kind of a taboo around like quitting a seed early, can be seen as disrespectful, especially if it's in a race. But I truly believe like no one should give this game enough power to actually like upset you. So if what you need to do is like quit a seed in the middle and just turn it off and walk away, I think that's better than like fuming your way through the end of it and like saying something you don't mean to your opponent afterwards. You know, like you have to protect yourself from those kinds of artificial negative emotions. So that's just what I try to do.
Sure. And if it keeps happening, maybe realize that you need maybe a bigger break, right?
Yeah.
If you keep getting pissed off because of the seed, maybe just stop and try to smell the roses, I guess, or find things that you can enjoy, like your family.
Exactly.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. I'm really glad that we were able to finally get this on.
Thank you. Absolutely. I'm happy to join the ranks of the folks that you've previously interviewed. It's a really impressive list of really, really cool people, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
Huge shout outs to Tim for coming on the show. Really appreciated him being here. Really fun listening to Tim talk. I mean, if you've listened to the Go Mode podcast, I'm stating the obvious, of course. Tim is just good people. And you like being around good people. And I mentioned this on the show, he brings like a childlike wonder to the whole rando scene that I love. That is great. We need more of. So huge shout outs to Tim. Thanks for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed the interview. If you did, let me know in the Discord. 216pod.com has the links to the Discord. You can join it from there. Please subscribe where you can. Really do appreciate everyone listening to the show. Still trying to figure out what the future is. I've got a few weeks to figure it out. And I'll let you all know. Next week's a great one. Someone that I've mentioned on the show a lot. Someone I was really looking forward to interviewing and he didn't disappoint. That is Zelga Dasan. We'll see you here on Monday for that. Check it out. Thanks for listening.